Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, taking you through this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, it's back to the Tom Brady discussion. I know it's been your favorite the last few weeks. Let's do it. The more this continues to drag on, the more I love it. We're sitting here in the studio right now, and they're talking about Tom Brady's potential destinations on ESPN. They keep flashing up pictures of Mike Vrabel and, you know, John Gruden in there too, like he's going to go to Vegas. I'd be shocked if he went to Vegas. But there's an NFL coach, or at least I should say a former NFL coach out there, that doesn't think Tom Brady to the Titans makes any sense whatsoever. Eric Mangini was on First Things First talking about the Tom Brady situation and his potential interest in the Titans. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I don't think it makes a lot of sense at all. And it's not because of the city. The city is a great place to play. And the fit is a great fit. It's probably culturally as close to New England as anybody has gotten to this point. And Mike brings a very different flavor and impact because he played and he's got that perspective. But I don't think you want to do business with friends. And you talked about the difficulty that New England would have in cutting Tom Brady. Now, what if Mike Vrabel has to cut Tom Brady after a year? And Mike is in a situation where they had Marcus Mariota, a high draft pick. That didn't work out. And they switch and they have the comeback player of the year. And things go pretty well. And now you're going to bring in potentially a guy for a year or 2 years. It's not really building for the long term. So I think that could actually be ugly as opposed to be a positive thing.
So you're saying Vrabel wouldn't be able to move off of Tom Brady if things went sour, and that's a reason not to even bring him on?
Well, I just think whenever you do business with friends, that then it can get cloudy. And one of the greatest things about New England and one of the greatest things about Bill Belichick
is no friends.
There are no friendships there. It's purely economics, and he makes business decisions. And when you do that, you're doing what's in the best interest of the organization, and that's ultimately what you want to your team to be able to do.
That was the man genius on First Things First the other day talking about the Brady situation. Joe, we've talked extensively about the relationship between Tom Brady and Mike Vrabel, and I guess we've always used it as a positive as to why that could be something that really helps the Titans get him, maybe something that really helps Tom Brady's interest in the Titans. Could the relationship ultimately be a bad thing for the Titans if they bring in Tom Brady and maybe his play isn't quite up to what they thought they were signing up for?
What's Eric Mangini doing these days? Is he a full-timer on there?
Apparently on First
Things
First. Is he
assistant coach somewhere in the NFL? I forgot he existed.
His description is former NFL coach.
Yeah.
So that means he's not doing nothing.
Yeah.
If you say former and anything.
But man, did he have a great tenure with the Jets. As good of a tenure as you could have
How long was that?
I think about 8 months. I don't know. 2 years maybe.
I would love to see a podcast with him and Jim Tomsula. That would be an awesome podcast.
A lot of
podcast.
Sweat on that podcast. Be like you just taking a CrossFit class.
Meat sweats.
Yeah.
Tom Sula and Mangini.
Oh, my goodness.
Meat sweats the podcast. I mean, this is now getting into, like, we're you know, like analyzing, like, what's going to happen when Brady's here, which, hey, maybe we'll get to find out. But, yeah, I don't know. That wouldn't be anywhere near the top of the list of reasons I would, you know.
Yeah, you can worry about that after you've signed it.
Like, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, every day there's something new on this, which is, I mean, everyone's taking a little slice of this. I don't know Matthew Berry of ESPN. I mean, they have a lot of people. I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, he had a big thing on stuff he learned at the Combine, and he ranked Tom Brady's teams. Now, this is a new one. He ranked the most likely teams. He doesn't think he'll go back to New England, and he ranked his most likely teams as, one, the Tampa Bay Bucks, then the Titans, then the Raiders. I mean, that's the first time I've really heard Brady to the Bucks as a series. I'm sure he'd like to throw to Mike Evans.
I'm sure he would.
You know, but
that weather down there in Florida is nice too.
Yeah, I mean, but also he threw in just here's a sentence. He just threw in. You know, it's like he's got all these items. A Titans insider, this is Matthew Baer from ESPN, told me he expects the team to franchise Derrick Henry if they can't come to a long-term deal, in parentheses, and let Ryan Tannehill test the market. Okay, on to the next item. Wait, what?
Now, wait a minute. That seems like a pretty big deal.
That would be, this is where, like, this is, you know, Jared and I had a text thing back and forth. Jared Stillman.
Jared is known to text.
Yeah, well, I texted him because he he twists my words. But, you know, we had this thing because, you know, Floyd thinks that, like, when a media report has anonymous sources, it's just fake. And like I said, like, there's some people who, like, they have to have their sources vetted. Like, they'll get fired if they, like, the Seth Wickersham story about, that's what we were talking about, Brady and Belichick. Think whatever you want about the relationship. I promise you that he had actual sources in the New England organization telling him those actual things. I promise you that.
Yeah.
Okay? Whether they were right or not, I don't know, or exaggerating. That's the problem with anonymous sources, is that people are not accountable for the words they say.
Right.
And that can be a problem. But, like, so I'm reading this, and this is where some of the criticism, like, a Titans insider. What does that mean? What is a Titans insider? Is John Robinson saying, yeah, we're going to franchise Henry and let Tannehill test the market? No. So how inside is the Titans insider? This is where I have a problem with the over-reliance on the anonymous sources, and it's just sort of thrown it. I mean, that's a big news story if you have a high-level source in the Titans organization, and you're an ESPN senior writer. So that's a high-level, it's a big story if you have a high-level source. What is an insider? Is it like someone, you know, a scout somewhere just sort of speculating?
Because that just basically sounds like in that article that was just thrown in there. Oh, by the way.
Yeah, you know, it's number seven. It's number seven of 20 items. Just, you know, here and there, da-da-da. And I understand if you're an ESPN senior writer, you cover the league, the Titans' doings aren't necessarily top of the mind. But then again, I think the Brady sweepstakes right now is pretty much the top story of the NFL, right?
In all of sports, yes.
So, like, that stuff, I'd like to either see that fleshed out, I'd like to see it explained more, because I'm very dubious of that. I'm very dubious of the Titans are like, yeah, we'll let them test. I mean, I think if this is true, okay, and it's actually high in the organization, then that means they've decided on Brady right now.
Yeah. Because you can't just say, hey, yeah, we're going to let Tannehill test the market and not get Brady. Like, you can't lose both.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the worst case scenario.
You cannot. Yeah, you cannot come away from this without either of them. And even if you end up losing Tannehill and you get Brady, I'd say a large portion of the fan base, although it would be a huge story, we'd all go nuts and, oh, what fun we would have. I think a pretty significant majority of Titans fans would be like, so Vrabel hired his buddy instead of the quarterback who just got us to the AFC Championship game.
They might at first, but the more time that drug on and the closer we got to training camp, they'd be like, we got Tom freaking Brady.
Well, yeah, you'd have to.
Here.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. You're right. People would warm up to it, and of course, hey, you'd be hopeful, like, well, let's hope he's still got a couple bullets in the chamber, right? I mean, it's, you know, let's see if this guy can get us there. And either way, it would be good for business. Whether people are complaining or not, more Titans fans' butts would be in seats next fall if Tom Brady were on the team. I have no doubt about that.
Going back to Mangini's comments real quick, he's talking about, you know, maybe it's not a great idea, not a good fit that makes any sense, because if Tom Brady gets here in Nashville, he plays for the Titans, and after 1 year you're looking at the body of work and you're like, man, I just don't know. That wasn't what we signed up for. That wasn't the production we expected to get from Tom Brady. Would Mike Vrabel be willing at that point to cut ties with Tom Brady? We know they're very good friends personally. I still kind of get the sense, though, and Joe, tell me if you disagree, you know, Mike Vrabel has shown he's not afraid to do what's best for the team. That's all he talks about. It's my job to do what's best for the team. I still think he'd do it. I think if
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that would be much of a hindrance. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, you know, would Brady be upset about it at first? Yeah, probably so. But it's not like it's going to just derail their entire friendship, I wouldn't think, anyway.
They'll still go to the Derby.
They'll still go to the Derby together.
Look, I mean,
bet on those horses.
Vrabel told us about, at one point, you know, coming to Nashville, I think, you know, before he had the job, to visit Matt Cassel. Like, he and his wife, you know, he's good friends with Matt Cassel going way back to New England and, you know, Kansas City. And they cut Matt Cassel.
Yeah.
You know, I want to make sure I have that correct, but I believe that was shortly after Vrabel arrived.
Yeah.
And they made the switch to Blaine Gabbert. So there's an example of if the friendship mattered that much, and he's like, yeah, let's let my buddy give it one more crack, you know? I don't think that's the concern. The concern is just that it would get to that point because Brady's not good enough anymore.
Which eventually, I mean, it will. I mean, depending on how long he wants to play.
It won't be long.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be 43 when the season begins next year. So, look, we could talk about the lack of weapons he had in New England, all these different things. But the fact of the matter is, you know, Father Time is undefeated. It's going to catch up to Tom Brady at some point. And he's reached that age where it could be this year. It could be next year. It could be 3 or 4 years from now. But it ain't going to be much longer than that before it catches up to him.
Yeah, I mean, you do this, and you're doing it for Tannehill, too. I think you're doing any move in the NFL with the idea that if you're this good, if you got the AFC Championship game, you're making moves to, like, try to take two more steps, right? Yeah. So you're making short-term decisions. But if you can make a short-term decision you think could help you win right now, and you also might get a little bit of long-term benefit of it, like I think you could with Ryan Tannehill because he's only 31, well, there's another reason that if you're going pros and cons on a list, that's another reason that I would put a check next to Tannehill's name.
When we come back, how much attention do we think Tom Brady is paying to the impending free agents that the Titans have? Derrick Henry's contract negotiations, Jack Conklin, his buddy Logan Ryan, who he played with in New England. How much attention, if at all, do we think Brady is paying to that? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Mike Tannenbaum on Get Up from yesterday on ESPN, talking about Tom Brady potentially coming to Tennessee and how much of an impact Derrick Henry is going to have in that discussion. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, I think it's pretty obvious. Like, Derrick Henry coming back to the Titans is going to be a huge factor in whether or not Brady comes here. I mean, if you don't have Derrick Henry, what's the point at that point? I mean, he's your biggest weapon on offense.
Yeah, that was, I mean, again, like, there's just the different little pieces of analysis of this it's kind of amazing at times. I love Dan Orlovsky, by the way. I love watching his breakdowns of X's and O's. You know, it's great fun. I also enjoyed watching him as a Detroit Lions quarterback.
Running out of the back of the end zone? I'm sure that was just life-changing.
I knew you'd think of that play. He had other good plays, though. Come on now.
Was that one of them? One of the good plays that he had? Yeah. That's good.
But Orlovsky, like, basically was like, yeah, I mean, they'll get Brady, they'll have to pay him, but, of course, then you can't have Derrick Henry. It's like, yeah, I don't think Tom Brady would be nearly as interested in this place, and we're all just speculating at his interest, but it makes sense he'd be interested because Derrick Henry's on this team. That's a big part of the reason that I would think Tom Brady would look at this team and say, might be able to make a little run there. So does Tom Brady want to come somewhere, get paid, and then that team lose all its good players? So you go 7-9? I don't see it, man.
Got a text in on the text line that says, why do you guys ignore the fact that, as Floyd Reese says, we need a new offensive line to pass block for Brady as he can't run away from the rush and would likely be in the hospital after the second or third game because he got killed from the pass rush? Joe, I think you and I both have said.
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Tannehill, it's what we expect to happen, maybe what we think should happen, for them to go back with Ryan Tannehill and do what's gotten them here, because there's no question. I mean, that offensive line, while they got better as the year went along last year, it's got some warts, and especially pass blocking. I mean, run blocking, I think they came together very well towards the end of the year, but pass blocking still at times, Ryan Tannehill's ability to move, I think, covered up for a lot of that.
well, it covered up for a lot of it, got him out of trouble, but also they used his ability to move as a big weapon within the offense. And so just take that out of the playbook. It's all out. I'm not saying, well, obviously the counter to that is, okay, well, Tom Brady's never been a runner. He is a great quarterback sneaker, by the way, like elite.
Elite. One of the, maybe the best ever.
Like, I would say he's the best ever at that. I'm not willing to say he's the best quarterback ever. He's one of the best quarterbacks ever. But he is maybe the best quarterback sneaker ever. But he's never been able to run. So if you want to argue, he's been okay. He's got six rings, and that's fine. But again, what worked for this team? What did we just see? What are the pieces that worked? And I think that is a good point. Floyd talking about, you know, the offensive line. I mean, look, they were on a pace last year to, like, set the record for sacks allowed. Now, granted, that was when Taylor Lewan was suspended. And then, you know, it took him a couple weeks to, after he got back, for things to get better.
And let's be honest. A few of those early on were on Marcus. Just get rid of the ball.
Like, yeah, that's true.
There were a lot of holding the ball.
Yeah. No, you're right. Some were on Marcus. But overall, pass protection was a big issue. Roger Saffold was a turnstile early. He got better and better. I think he and Lewan got better and better together. Communication, handing guys off, dealing with twists, all that stuff. You know, some of that is just familiarity and reps. So they got to where they were, I think, fine at the end of the year. But to the point there, Tannehill also can escape here and there and extend plays with his legs, and Tom Brady is not going to do that. I mean, the Titans, they didn't sack Brady in that game, but they affected him some, even with a pass rush that, frankly, needs a lot of help. So, yes, it would be a big, big change to go to Brady, one of a few reasons that I absolutely think Tannehill's the better choice.
What are the pros of Tom Brady potentially deciding to sign with the Tennessee Titans? Dan Orlovsky from Get Up got into that yesterday. Here's what Orlovsky had to say.
And let's go to the team that knocked him out of those playoffs in Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee, the first thing is you get to go chase a Super Bowl championship with one of your best friends. You know what guys don't do? FaceTime other guys, unless you have plans to do something big. So the relationship with Mike Vrabel is a big deal. Second, this is an offense and a football team that is focused on the run. They're not going to ask Tom Brady to drop back 45 times like he used to have to do and win football games through the air. And then the third thing is this is good weapons. Rookie A.J. Brown, 1,000-yard receiver. Jonnu Smith, a young tight end, 13 yards per catch. And then remember, Adam Humphries, who's the slot receiver for the Titans, is actually the slot receiver that the Patriots and Tom Brady tried to go get last offseason but lost out to him. So a lot of good things with Tennessee.
So that was Dan Orlovsky talking about the pros of Tom Brady is choosing to sign with the Titans. I think everything he listed there we've talked about and would agree with. The weapons certainly, I think, are in the Titans' favor, especially when you compare them to New England's weapons, or lack thereof, at the moment. But then Orlovsky went on to the cons of Brady potentially deciding to side with the Titans. Here's what he had to say about that.
Now, the cons. It's a small market. Tom Brady played at the University of Michigan, big market. He played at the New England Patriots, big market. This is a small market. Is he looking for that with a TB12 brand? And then the reality is this. If you pay Tom Brady the money that a lot of people are saying he's commanding, you can't keep Derrick Henry, that bell cow, back, and you probably can't keep your right tackle Jack Conklin either. So that offensive line is a little bit weakened if you're going to pay Brady all the money he wants. This is the best realistic fit for Tom Brady.
So those were the cons Orlovsky listed on Get Up yesterday. The small market thing, Tom Brady could play on the backside of Mars, and he could market himself. I'm not worried about that. I think that gets way overblown. It's the NFL.
We've got celebrities here. Plenty of celebrities here, Lavsky.
Yeah, you keep your pretty hair up in the studios and ESPN, and we'll deal with our celebrities here, and Tom Brady can come and take his pretty hair here. I'm not worried about that part of it. He did mention, you know, if you pay Tom Brady the money that he wants, you wouldn't be able to sign Derrick Henry and potentially not able to sign Jack Conklin. I think he could probably sign Derrick Henry if you pay Tom Brady the money that he wants.
Yeah, that's bad math.
Yeah.
Yes, you could. And maybe it's, you know, maybe they can't sign both of them. I don't know what's the number for Brady.
Yeah, I know. And then how long's the deal? Like, are you talking 30 a year, 31 a year, 35 a year?
I think you're north of 35.
You think north of 35 per year?
I think so. Probably. I mean, and I don't like. Is it a 2-year huge deal? huge money for 2 years? Is Tom Brady willing to do that? Is Tom Brady, like, is anybody willing to sign Tom Brady till he's 47? Like, I don't, you know, I mean, obviously any NFL player wants a longer term deal, you know, than management wants to give them. That's normally the case. But like, it seems to me like both sides could agree, okay, let's give this 2 years and see if we can win a Super Bowl. But I think it would be north of $35 million a year for Tom Brady. So now
that is expensive, my friend.
It is. So that's where, and again, so let's say you could sign Tannehill to like a 4-year, $28 million deal. Okay. I don't know if you can, but you could do that. And could you keep those two guys that Orlovsky mentioned? Would you rather have that or Brady making, you know, 7 to 10 million more than Orlovsky and have to lose one of those guys?
Yeah, but I mean, because also, like, you know, if things go south with Derrick Henry, which I don't think they're going to, but if they do and you're not able to sign him to a long-term deal, like, is it worth getting Tom Brady at all at that point? Like, that's still, regardless if it's Tannehill or if it's Brady, Henry's got to be the focal point of your team, right? I mean, especially after what he did last year.
I think so, yeah. So you're saying, like, can't sign Henry, forget these guys, and tank for Trevor? Is that what you're talking about now?
Maybe.
I still have the theory.
You'd have to cut a lot of other good football players.
I know. I'm still under the theory that just because I've seen what happens with the Colts, Trevor Lawrence is going to end up in Indianapolis. Just watch.
That's probably true.
They're going to go from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck to a 1-year stopgap with Jacoby Brissett, or maybe 2 years, and then Trevor Lawrence.
That'd be something.
That's a nightmare scenario for Titans fans right there, let me tell you.
I tell you what, they'd have to they'd have to go with Brissett and not go like sign another, a better quarterback,
like,
and
Philip
hope
Rivers,
Brissett
yeah.
really stinks this year.
But no, I think, look, if you're Brady, you want that running game, right? Because everybody makes a big deal about, you know, Tom Brady's going to want to come in and he's going to want to throw it 40 to 45 times a game.
Yeah, I don't buy it at all.
I don't think so.
No.
I think he just wants to win.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if they are winning games and Brady's throwing the ball 25 times a game, I mean, he's probably going to be okay with that.
I mean, the New England offense has been heavy, heavy swing pass to the running back for a while now. It goes back to any Titans fan who remembers the loss to New England in the playoffs. I mean, I think Deion Lewis caught like 15 passes in that game. I'm probably exaggerating, but it was dink, 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 dink out of the backfield. That's a lot of those pass attempts, you know, is that. But whatever it is, absolutely. If Brady can go out there and throw 20 to 25 times and hand off to a great player and win, yeah, he doesn't. Like, this whole thing about, oh, the TB12 brand, or he wants to have his numbers, I don't buy that. I think he wants to win.
He's always wanted to win. That's why he's never signed these gigantic contracts that's just crippled the Patriots. Like, I think we've somehow in this conversation forgotten, like, what Tom Brady is. Like,
yeah.
He just wants to win.
He's a champion. And that's the attraction. Again, it's just, you'd rather have like a 35-year-old champion than a 43-year-old champion, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Not that 40-plus-year-old people can't be great athletes.
That's right.
Yeah, ask Joe Rexroth.
Case in point. You've seen me on the court, Marquise. Come on.
I have, man. You're good,
man. He's a baller.
Got an old-school game to him, man. It's like playing David Robinson
all
over.
Look at the backhanded compliment right there. Old-school game to him. Wow. I like it. When we come back, which quarterback in the league next year can do the quote-unquote Ryan Tannehill formula and maybe sneak in there and there as a backup and end up as a starter by the end of the season and playing really well? Could Marcus Mariota be that guy? We'll get into that next. But first, ESPN 102.5 The Game is hitting the road for a Preds game. This year it's off to Columbus to cheer on the Preds as they take on the Blue Jackets at Nationwide Arena on Saturday, March 14th. The tickets are on sale now, and to purchase those, you can visit thegamenashville.com. Now, the deadline to purchase those tickets is 2 p.m. today, so make sure you get on that if you want to go to the trip to Columbus on Saturday, March 14th. All net proceeds will go to relief efforts in the Nashville area. So a really cool thing we're doing here at ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trip is organized by Simply a Fan. Visit simplyafan.com for other upcoming sports adventures. Transportation provided by Gray Line of Tennessee. We'll be right back on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroth, repping the athletic and the hoodie that we all want. Marquise Munson behind the glass, looking as good as he always looks.
Always.
Always, baby. Munson time.
I wake up like this.
Yes, you do. Joe, when you look at the league right now, obviously a lot of quarterback movement expected this offseason. Which quarterback do we feel like is the most likely to take a page out of Ryan Tannehill's book and go maybe be a backup situation somewhere with the potential later on in the season to be a starter? And the first situation that comes to mind when I think of this is the Chicago Bears, because there's a lot of negativity and heat being tossed Mitch Trubisky's way in Chicago right now. And if you watch him play, understandably so, he's been pretty terrible. Which quarterback do we feel like really could thrive in a situation like that? And I'm going to toss it out there. Do we think Marcus Mariota could be one of those guys that ends up in a situation like the Chicago Bears and potentially runs with it later on in the season, just like Tannehill did here in Nashville?
I think Marcus Mariota is exactly the guy. That's the place I've had picked out for him for a while, although it was really ideal when his college coach at Oregon was the OC there. Mark Helfrich is not anymore, but I still think if you're Marcus Mariota, you have to look at that situation and love it other than the weather. I mean, Trubisky is...
You mean Chicago's not like Hawaii?
There's a slight... Actually, Chicago in the summer is about as good as it gets.
Yeah, but the summer lasts for like 3.5 weeks in Chicago. It's like...
Yeah.
Just one warm front moves in, and that's it.
Yeah, well, it's not Canada, but
I mean, it's pretty close.
The wind whipping through the city is bad.
When they played the Predators in the playoffs a few years ago, I left here one day. They had games 1 and 2 here in Nashville. It was 85 degrees in April, which is, I mean, that's awesome. We love it. It's great. I left. I got to Chicago. It was 26. When you look at a map, Chicago and Nashville, they're not that far away from each other. That is like a 50-degree temperature swing.
Yeah. Now,
60. Excuse me. Math's not good.
It's April 8th or whatever, right? You know, May, June, July, August, September, good. Now, once you get into like mid to late October, a lot of the football season,
that's pretty early into the NFL season.
Yes,
it is. I don't know how Marcus feels about that. So,
but, you know, look, we can get cold here, too, and he has the turtleneck, you know, thing he wears. He'll be fine. I think that's his spot. I really do. And I think Trubisky is beyond vulnerable. Maybe he'll respond, but, you know, that's a delicate situation because obviously, I mean, Ryan Pace moved up to get him and moved up and ignored guys who might be Hall of Famers. I think one
Patrick
of them.
Patrick Mahomes.
And look, you know, with Mahomes, like, look, that's a heck of a find. I mean, a lot of people weren't all that high on him. Certainly didn't think he was going to be what he has become. But Deshaun Watson, significantly better than Mitch Trubisky so far in the NFL. And that's a guy a lot of people said, did you watch him play in college?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. You like the kid from North Carolina, huh? So it's touchy. Like, they're going to give him every opportunity to turn it around because Ryan Pace as GM, you know, if it ends up totally failing and they move on to someone else, what does that mean for his future? It's not great.
Can't be good.
It's not great. But I mean, if you're a quarterback like Mariota looking around at a place where there could be opportunity, I can't think of many better situations than that one. And it's like Tannehill. I mean, Tannehill got traded to the Titans, but he had to know that this was a place where there could be opportunity beyond just coming in for an injured player, and it turned out that way, and he ran with it.
So a lot of people have floated out the idea of maybe trading for Andy Dalton. Obviously, everyone expects the Cincinnati Bengals to take Joe Burrow with the first pick in the draft. Dalton's been the quarterback in Cincinnati since 2011. What makes more sense if you're a team like Chicago where you have Mitch Trubisky, you don't have high confidence heading into the season that he's going to be your guy? If you're a team around the NFL and you're looking to bring in a backup quarterback that you know at some point is probably going to have to play, does it make more sense to go with Andy Dalton, or does it make more sense to go with a guy like Marcus Mariota?
Well, I mean, I think for the Bears, and again, it's kind of like when we go back to the Tannehill-Brady discussion about what is your offense, what do you do in your offense, what fits. And what the Titans do, a lot of what the Titans do, utilizes Tannehill, utilized Mariota, and the Bears do a lot of that stuff with Trubisky. Trubisky is a good athlete. They use that. I think it would be a more seamless transition to Mariota. I don't know if Mariota is better than Dalton. Dalton's a tough one because he's been pretty good, and they've been, in a lot of cases, pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, like, I still think he's a pretty solid quarterback. I think he could work for somebody. But in that particular situation, the Bears, I think Mariota is definitely the choice because you don't have to change. I mean, Dalton is very statuesque quarterback and like Brady. So I think that gives Mariota the edge. I think they're overall, if you want to talk about overall quarterback quality, probably pretty close to each other.
When we look at, you know, obviously Ryan Tannehill came in here as the backup basically because, you know, Mariota's injury history would suggest that at some point the backup quarterback was going to have to play. Obviously, things unraveled with Mariota. They start 2-4. Tannehill comes in and plays the best football he's ever played in his life. Do we feel like Marcus has something like that in him? Like, if he gets his next opportunity as a starter somewhere, do we feel like he can put together a run like Tannehill did and kind of take the ball and run with it and maybe get a future starting job out of it? Because I'll be honest with you, I would be surprised.
Would you?
If we saw, I really would.
I'm still high on Mariota's talent and certainly his intangibles. I do think that the question, I think the difference between those two, Tannehill came here having gone through some serious injury stuff, but the difference, I think, between those two when you watch one after the other was Tannehill stood in that pocket and made some throws that Mariota did not make because he was not there to make them. Mariota, to me, looked like a guy who was really feeling the rush last year. Now, is that because he was being protected so poorly? I think probably some, but I also wonder if all the injuries have kind of affected him. Mm-hmm. It happens. It happens all the time. That's my question for Mariota. Can he get past that?
I mean, that Jacksonville game last year in Jacksonville, I mean, that was almost uncomfortable to watch. Just how often they were able to get to him in the backfield. Like, I thought Calais Campbell was going to have like 25 sacks in that game. It was yeah. Unbelievable how often he got back there. So I do think there is something to the fact that Mariota's confidence, I think, got broken during his time here. Because, he did show signs his second year. He played really, really well. Now, after that, nothing great, nothing special.
Well, but there were some special moments of beating Jacksonville. Shoot, how he played in the second half of a playoff win at Kansas City. I mean, it's not like nothing good happened after that.
No, you're right, but it was there was zero consistency to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero. And even, like, you know, even the comeback win, he made some great plays, but, like, the highlight play he had there, he threw a touchdown pass to himself.
Yeah,
like,
that
how
was
often
luck.
Is that going to happen?
I mean, that was a lucky play. I agree. I mean, he's had good moments. Like you said, 2016 was the season that I absolutely thought we were watching a star in the making, and it was the end of that season that he broke his leg at Jacksonville. Yeah. And I do think that there's a difference whether – and you could go down the list and say, wow, the offense, the system, Trubisky, the weapons. You could go through all kinds of things. If you're a total Mariota loyalist, you can find plenty of excuses, but – I do think he changed for the worse after that. So, I don't know. Can he get it? Is it a fresh environment? Does that make the difference? I think with a lot of quarterbacks, if you put him in a good situation like Tannehill had last year, the protection got better. The running game was great. The weapons were, you know, A.J. Brown started to really become a factor. Jonnu Smith started to become a factor. A lot of quarterbacks will run with that. I do think Mariota's got more winning football in him if he gets the right situation.
Back to our discussion about the cold earlier, Johnny writes in and says, it does get into the 20s in April in Vancouver at least. We're comfortably starting to reach the mid-40s and higher. So, yes, Chicago is colder than Canada, Rex Road. I rest my case.
Well, the windy city, it is amazing. That wind off the lake in the winter there, that probably rivals places that are far north of it.
It's enough to make you angry all the time.
Just stay inside, really, Mariota. Is. Stay inside.
Just stay indoors. Don't ever go outside ever in Chicago while you're there. When we come back, man, it was a big night last night for local basketball teams in the SEC around here. We hadn't had a whole lot of those this year. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. What a night it was for SEC basketball teams in our area last night. Vandy with a big win against Alabama. Tennessee goes into Kentucky and gets a big win, down 11 at the half. Come back and outscore Kentucky 50-31 in the second half to win the game 81-73. John Fulkerson, 27 points last night, Joe, 10-15 from the field. He was awesome last night.
He was unbelievable. And, like, if you watch that game, you know, Kentucky, their entire defensive strategy was trying to deny him in the post, and then they weren't hard doubling him, but they were hedging. They were digging a lot. They were giving extra attention. They were really, like he was just going around Nick Richards, who's a really good all-around player. But, man, Fulkerson just hitting those mid-range jumpers and those crafty little moves, and then he would just fly around with those arms flailing and, you know, knock a loose ball to a teammate. I mean, he was unbelievable. Josiah James, too, was great. The second half, they outscored him 47-22 after they were down 17 in the second half. And Josiah James was a big part of that whole thing. That's the player Tennessee signed, the McDonald's All-American, who, of course, has been hurt a lot of this year. If that's what they're going to get from him, you know, this team could really start to make things interesting. And they are already, if you look at some of the bracket people out there, kind of like a third team, fourth team out
creeping
just off
around.
That win. So now if you beat Auburn on Saturday, that's still tough. It's Bruce Pearl, and he's had a lot of success against Tennessee in recent years, and Rick Barnes. But if you can get that done, you go to Nashville, and you are basically right on the bubble.
You know what I thought of immediately when I saw that the game was over last night and Tennessee had won? I thought immediately back to the Auburn game they've already played. Because if you don't win this game Saturday against Auburn, you could look back at that one at Auburn as just such a gigantic missed opportunity. Anytime you're up by 17 points on the road, you got to find a way to win that game. So
they'd be in the field right now.
They would absolutely be in the field.
They'd be in the field with those two wins.
But now they've given themselves a chance. I mean, we thought after that Arkansas game, I thought they were dead and buried and gone, as Nick Saban likes to say. But a big win against Florida, a comeback win last night against Kentucky, you beat Auburn this weekend, and all of a sudden you've positioned yourself pretty well heading into the SEC tournament, where if you're able to hang around in that tournament, I think you're going to give yourself a pretty good shot to get in, which I would not have thought was possible this time last week.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many people, of course, doing brackets. Shelby Mass does it for USA Today. He's got Tennessee the fourth of his first four out right now. And again, like, no one really had them on the board before last night. But that's what a win like that does. You're talking about a potential two seed here that you just won on their floor. The NCAA committee, their number one question is, can this team win games in the tournament? That's what they ask.
Yeah.
And so when you demonstrate that you can go to Kentucky and do what they did in Kentucky, that's going to make people notice. So, yeah, like, I thought going into this week, if they lost either of these two games, then it's basically an auto bid in Nashville. And I think that's probably the case. If they lose at home to Auburn, they're probably back in a pretty much, I guess you could say, maybe make the championship game in Nashville. And I guess, you know, maybe you could get in, but win against Auburn. And it's not like you have to win, I don't think, the SEC tournament to get in. I think Tennessee's probably going to play on the Thursday. So a title in the SEC tournament for Tennessee would require four wins in 4 days. And this team is not a deep team. Rick Barnes does not get a ton from his bench. So that's a big ask of that team. You know, you got to have a deep team, you know, to be able to do that. And at 10-8, if they win Saturday, they're not going to be in the top four. So This changes the outlook for them, no doubt about it.
Has Fulkerson turned into their unquestionable go-to guy? Like, he's caught up to Bowden now in terms of leading the team and scoring, both averaging 13.6 a game. He's been really solid as of late. Like, is he the clear number one option right now for the Vols?
Yeah, I mean, and think about how they've played. It's funny because, of course, they've played through Grant Williams, especially for the past two seasons. And really, even when he was a freshman, they started to go that way. Very much an inside-out team, going to the post, stop him. Teams had to double him. And then you move the ball around, you get open shots off that. And this year was supposed to be Lamonte Turner and Jordan Bowden. They're going to have to be more perimeter-reliant. And instead, it's come back around to throw the ball into Falky. And he's got a real crafty game about him, and he's got a lot of confidence right now. So, yeah, I think you do start there. And then if Eve Pons can hit you some jumpers from the four spot like he did last night, well, now you're really putting teams in a conflict with that. Vescovi,
really, not a great night shooting.
Not a great night shooting. It's slowed down, but he made some really big plays. And again, if you have a wing like Josiah James playing like that, rebounding, defending, but making great passes and then also hitting some shots from the outside, I mean, that's a team that's good enough to be in the NCAA tournament. No question in my mind. They have to keep getting the results, though.
Vandy with a big road win in the SEC, an 87-79 win at Alabama. Their first road win in the SEC, I believe, since March of 2018.
There you go. Like 2 years, almost exactly.
Almost to the day. Munson, defend your boys. What happened last night?
Man, yeah, I didn't like how they played Alabama at the end of that game. Like, it was like the Titanic on a sinking ship, right? We're going to just play our way out of this? No, don't play Alabama in the background as we're losing to Vanderbilt at home. Like, that's ridiculous.
But Saban Lee, unbelievable.
Yeah, Saban Lee was incredible. That was a point guard battle with Saban Lee versus Kyra Lewis. That guard battle was amazing, and those two guys are great. Vandy has been competitive since getting that win against LSU, so I'm not too mad. They've been competitive on and off throughout the season. I know they got beat by Ole Miss pretty bad, but other than that, like, this is one of those seasons that a lot of people didn't expect Alabama to be a top four, top five seed with Nate Oates, and it being his first year. I think next year they have a lot of talent back, so they'll be okay, but it sucks to watch, Vandy get their first anything on Alabama.
I got to question Nate Oates because, Vanderbilt, well documented, shorthanded, they're playing walk-ons, all this stuff. It's amazing some of the stuff they're doing. But they also didn't have Jordan Wright last night. Jordan Wright's been a really big part of this team, and he's emerged a really good freshman guard. So he's out, apparently, with concussion symptoms. Like, if you're playing Vanderbilt, Nate, you zone whatever you need to do, and Missouri did a great job of this. Put three, put three guys looking at Saban Lee at all times. I mean, he got into the lane to me way too easily, and if you're playing that team right now, you say take away Saban Lee, do whatever you can, and everybody else go ahead. You beat us then.
He's turned into an absolute superstar though. He's been unbelievable.
He has been, and now he's not going to go 6 for 7 from three most nights.
No.
He was feeling it. He's not a great shooter. I don't know if he will be. But he is becoming a great player and just as explosive as anyone out there, honestly, in the game, in college basketball, and has really figured out, and I think you have to give Jerry Stackhouse credit for this, has really figured out how to use angles, how to get into post a little bit and use ball fakes. And he had some really nice, crafty buckets, as he has lately, kind of in the lane. He is just so much fun to watch. And this team now, guys, has two wins with this lineup. And you think about no wins in the SEC last year. No one's going to give Jerry Stackhouse, coach of the year for a 10-20 team. He has done an unbelievable job.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it.
I mean, it was credit to both coaches last night because, they're both first-year head coaches. They're both picked up a team that last year wasn't, all that impressive, especially Alabama last year and obviously with Vandy not winning an SEC game, to what they're doing now. Now, there's a different – like, I see a difference in how Nate Oates is coaching Alabama – compared to how Avery did. And I also see the same thing with Jerry Stackhouse here with Vandy. So I think they're both on a trajectory to be good. I'm not going to say great just yet. We'll see what Stackhouse does in the next couple years when he starts getting recruits in, because that's the main thing of just getting recruits. And we talk about this with college football all the time. I always mention this with even Jeremy Pruitt, of give him time to get a recruiting class, give him time to get guys in that, you know, will buy into his system, and then he'll start getting the program going to where he wants to take it. So, you know, but for what he has now, for what Jerry Stackhouse is working with right now, you have to give all credit, because, I mean, to get two wins, one being against LSU, who at the time was at the top of the SEC, ranked opponents, and you beat them, and then you beat an Alabama team that's been on the bubble in and out, but, you know, you beat them on the road as well. So you got to give credit where credit's due. Jerry Stackhouse has done a good job.
He has. I do want to pass this along before we head to break and come back with some Preds talk to begin the 8 o'clock hour. Nikki Genowitz from Fox 17 News is reporting. You know, last night we were talking about Putnam County. 77 people were unaccounted for. That number dropped to 38 overnight, with names being released and people being able to get in contact with those people. That number now down to 24 people unaccounted for. So hopefully that news continues to trend in a positive direction in Putnam County. Absolutely. That's what we're all hoping and praying for here.
Yeah, keep going down and going down, because, you know, we're finding people and they're reaching out.
Absolutely. You're listening to Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. When we come back, it was a tough night for the Preds last night in Minnesota. We'll talk about that next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.